Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul France, owner of France Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have talk guests every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just call 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talk Show website at www.talkshow.com and search for Quality 17702. Or you can actually go for the best online experience, which is go to twitch.tv, yes, twitch.tv/SFU on call, and you will find us there. You'll be able to join the wonderful chat room and chat with Dave and Chris and maybe Iggy and all the folks there that join us for the podcast. And of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, you can follow her on Twitter or X or whatever they're calling it these days. My personal account is Paul France, PAUFRNZ. There's no T in that. And also, of course, the podcast account, which is sfuoncall. And of course, my business account, which is France Games. That's where you can see what's happening on SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. And of course, it's lovely talk cast, get sent to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. When it comes to news from AV this week, there is nothing. The StratCon is going on at Amarillo. So, you know, Steve's been helping out a little bit with that and talking to people about it, which is always awesome. And this week's found on the online store is GURPS Romulan book. Now it's $24.95 and it's newly released, revised in 2021. Yes, I know it's like 2 years ago, but it's what's considered a new product. And also, I think for those people who really want to know about the history of Starfleet Universe, and of course, in this case, the Romulans. The GURPS Romulans is a source book for the GURPS Prime Directive Romulan Star Empire and the Federation's long-standing foe. The Romulans are the most intriguing enemy faced by the Federation, and the Romulans definitely regard the Federation as their greatest foe. And in that book, you'll find more about the Empire and more about the history of the Romulans, find out how the Vulcans left their home world and found new worlds, forged them together to create a new mighty empire, and discover how Augustus Tal became the first Romulan emperor, and then explore the Romulan-Gorn Wars, because there were, I think, three, if I recall correctly. I'm thinking about the module from last week, which is module R4J, which also is an excellent module if you want to read about an alternate history, which was, as we went through it last week, was quite interesting in my mind. Definitely different takes on it. And if you want to go back and listen to the previous episode and find out more about that module and some of the histories, obviously I only do a quick overview of those histories, and I would definitely recommend that if you really want to find out more about the alternate histories, definitely buy the product. When it comes to SFB Online tournaments, the Sapphire 14 tournament still going on. Semifinals are all set, with me losing my game. So Steve McCann headed into the semifinals. He will be playing Jack Taylor. And as it comes to semifinals, already one game has been played, and that's Spartan, who's flying the ISC, defeated the Hood, who's flying the Fed. So good to see that we already have Spartan into the finals. So the question is, will it be Jack or will it be Steven? So we'll just have to wait and see on that. Obviously, I'll talk to later in the podcast about that game against Steven. And when it comes to library report, sorry to tell you that there's still some things, no progress there. I have some things I have to actually sit down and do when it comes to that, and I apologize for not getting to that before now. And so with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one and only Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfall Universe On Call. And tonight, well, we have Jeff. How you doing, Jeff?
Hey, everybody.
And we have Doug. How you doing, Doug?
I'm here. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good.
Doing good. StratCon's been fun.
There, and before we start on my topic, I figured we would start off with a quick, or maybe not so quick, update from Jeff from StratCon. How was StratCon? Well, so far.
Well, it's still ongoing. We've had a few people come and go, and I think we're going to run till a wrap up Saturday evening. The scenario this year was Heart of the Storm, which is everybody piles on the Federation, but the Federation gets the economy from HE double hockey sticks. they get quintupled starting SIT based on the fact the ISC is involved and their production is quadrupled.
Dang.
He has been running into problems where he doesn't have enough production to cover all of the money he has.
Oh, okay.
Now, this sounds like this would be highly unbalanced, and you'd be right. The thing is that it's not so unbalanced that it doesn't work.
Right.
And we just finished Coalition Turn 3, and we started for real Saturday afternoon. We've been averaging about one half of a turn per day, because there's eight of us. It's just been going crazy. Just briefly, for those of you who aren't familiar with Federation Empire,
yes.
Yeah, FNE is the strategic big older cousin to SFB, and for a lesser extent, Federation Commander. It's basically Axis and Allies with all kinds of extra economy and everything else. It can be quite complex. It can also be quite a lot of fun to figure out how you would fight the general war. And yeah, and they've got all kinds of different scenarios like this one to play different what if games.
And the original FNE game actually tries to guide people through the general war. Obviously,
right?
You can
the 1986 version of Federation and Empire was called something a little bit different.
Federation in Space,
I think it was.
Federation in Space.
And it was a contemporary of all of the other late 70s, early 80s, Avalon Hill, one box per battle kind of war games.
Yeah, agree. But the idea is that you can play the General War with your tweaks to it. But you know, you're still stuck with the productions that were part of the general war.
Right. And you have the technology available to you based on the year and the season. And so you don't get to start with all the fancy toys, but if you survive long enough, they come along.
Right. And also, unlike some strategic games, this one, well, at least the original, and not some of the other rules that you can use, because obviously the scenario you're playing is not realistic. It's not like the general war. But anyway, to that point, that is that it's not like some strategic games where you build up a tech tree, and depending upon how you focus your tech points or whatever system is used to increase your tech,
Yeah, there's no way there's no tech tree per se in FNE. You get what you get on a schedule based on the year in service, based on what would be familiar to SFB players.
Right,
and that's why there's a lot of crossover between the two.
Right, and you don't have the ability I'm just going to finish and saying. Let me finish, mm-hmm. Doug, and then I'll let you go. And also they don't allow you to like create your own ships or anything like that. It is the ships that were available at that moment in time.
Correct,
Doug.
Yeah, compared to Starfleet Battles, it's basically a very, very simple game at its core of what you have to do for the economics and the movement and the fighting. And I mean, it's a very strategic thing. It's very simple on the fighting. And the biggest part of it being the complexity side of it is simply the scale of it. Otherwise, it's a very smooth game to play mechanics wise.
Right.
I found.
Right. Yeah. It's like.
At its core, at its base.
Right. Agreed. So, you know, the one thing is that the complexity in my mind comes into, okay, when is this ship available? How to convert ships? How to refit ships? Those kind of things. There's where you have all those rules that can get, that's where the complexity lies in my mind.
Yeah. Just like in Starfleet Battles, where there's never enough power to do all the things you want to do on a given turn. In FNE, there's never enough money to do all the upgrades, all the production, all the other little things here and there that you might want to do. So it really is a resource balancing engine, every bit as much as Starfleet Battles can be.
Yep. And, you know, so, yeah, FNE, I've never played FNE, and Lord knows, FNE from the games that I've watched or at least poked my head in on, it takes a long time to play out the general war.
It does. You're committing to unless you've got a core of players that doesn't suffer from analysis paralysis or other wishy-washy time-wasting annoyances, you're looking at a 3-day weekend to run the general war just in your local group. Most people don't quite hit it that hard and heavy, and they might leave it set up in a protected space, and it might take them 3 or 4 months on the weekends,
right? So you don't have something like a Zinni come in and attack it.
Exactly.
Yep.
But yeah, that was actually a big draw for the Origins thing ages ago. I don't know if they still do that there or not.
Yeah, but, I don't think they do.
We would go to Origins way back in the day. There was an entire room of people just doing F&E, on their own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's.
And they would come in and get set up before the weekend started, and they'd spend their whole 4 days fighting like the entire general war or various scenarios, plus their own tournament.
And I've heard a lot of the stories this week.
Yeah, that was always interesting in that you weren't supposed to bring food into the space. They brought them in anyway.
We know nothing of what you speak.
Oh, for those people who don't know, Doug used to actually help run the con.
He's
Sergeant Schultz. I know nothing.
Staff for Origins for about 4 years.
At a certain point in time, you pretty much have to know when to turn a blind eye and when to raise a stink.
Agreed. And
it's a bunch of veterans and others and stuff. They got their way. Yeah. Without raising a big fuss and making a stink or being obvious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes subtlety is best.
Yeah, I remember the F&E people, they keep the food and so forth behind things. You know, so if you walked in the room, you didn't see it. But you know, everybody knew where, everyone who was in the room knew where it was kept. So.
So, you know. I remember playing Starfleet battles in a place like that where we had permission to bring in drinks and whatnot, but we couldn't have them on any of the tables, and they couldn't be there if a certain manager showed up.
Understood. I still remember Tim Sheehy. The only person I know of, only person to this day that I know of that played SFB and never bought a copy of the rules. He would learn it as he played. I'm not sure how he did it. I really don't. Also, he would bring in a six-pack of beer and drink it while playing. And actually, he would get better. Don't ask me how, but he would get better.
Well, sometimes there have been noted phenomena when you have a rational, sober brain that will react in a certain way to things. And as you slowly disconnect your faculties by intoxication, you actually end up taking the intermediate steps out between your inner genius and your inner editor. And it's been known to happen a time or two. Mm-hmm. That, and there's something about, you know, about certain deities protecting fools, children, and ships named Enterprise.
There's also just being like more relaxed about it too. So not overthinking.
Oh, agreed.
He was a whole bunch of different things.
Oh yeah, he was never slosh drunk. He was lucid. He always had that six pack of beer. he started the day with, and by the end of the day he was gone. He wouldn't like drink through a six pack of beer within the first game, you know, but like, okay. he was lucid, he was fine, he didn't cause a stink. When we just kind of turned a blind eye, it's like, okay, whatever, you know. If he was getting drunk and being, you know, and had to be handled, then we could handle it.
But yeah, that'd be different.
But that wasn't Tim Sheehy. So who was it? Darn it. I remember one year, this one guy and his girlfriend came out. I remember they
were on a motorcycle.
Yep, that's why I remember it.
Yeah, they drove out on a bike from the Midwest.
Right. To me, it's like, wow.
I think they were from Indiana or something.
There's someone here that roughly fits that description, because he rode an Indian Chief motorcycle here from Ohio. I'm going to ask him about this story later. Go on.
Yeah. No. It's nothing.
Probably not the same guy.
The only reason I remember it was because they showed up, you know, in the black leather, and mm-hmm. and I knew, you know, they had their helmets with them, and you know, and they hung out, and you know, he played some SFB, she just hung out with him, and you know, I think I didn't think they stayed for the whole weekend. I'm not sure if they stayed for 1 or 2 days, but but it was just that story of they drove, I forgot how many miles. It was a long distance travel to get there, you know. And that's what shocked me, because you know, being on a motorcycle for that long, it's like, wow. It just blew my mind. That's why I remember them.
Well, the other thing is, Origins had settled down into Columbus for a long time, and you and I were used to that 6-hour drive, mm-hmm. and just a 6-hour drive, roughly, depending on traffic. But, you know, when Origins was all over the country, people would fly in and drive across country to get to it.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
You know, simply because that's where you could do these things.
Mm-hmm. Understood.
That was back in the days before the internet made collective gaming very easy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, if you remember Mike Strain, him and mm-hmm. I, we had a we had a road trip from hell, going from Fort Hood out to when it was in, was it not San Francisco, but
San Diego?
Right next to it. San Diego, yeah, I think. No.
No, no, San Jose?
Was it? Huh?
San Jose?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
San Jose.
San Jose, that's right, because as soon as we got in my car, literally in the driveway, pulling out of the house that he rented back down at Hood, I turned on the radio and the song started On the Way to San Jose. Literally.
Wow.
That's perfect.
Getting up. And at that point, I knew we were in for an interesting frickin' drive. And like, I could probably spend the whole program talking about that drive. I mean, we killed a jackalope, had to basically jerry-rig a muffler pipe and all sorts of interesting things. It was a very interesting trip and a nice convention too. I wasn't on staff at that time because I was in the Army. But yeah, I mean, it's like not long after that particular trip, which was probably the longest trip I ever did for a convention, they settled down in Columbus like the next year or two.
Yeah, that's possible. All I remember is going to Origins in three locations. One was Philadelphia, one was Baltimore, and one was Columbus.
Yeah, I went to it when it was down at Baltimore.
Yeah, no, Baltimore was when I was in college. We went down there.
Yeah,
and after I graduated college,
was that
the one of the years that was when they went into Philadelphia, and actually I drove into Philadelphia every single day because I think that's when I was living in King of Prussia at that point. I think I was living in King of Prussia, and I just drove into Philadelphia every day. Just because it's like it was so close, like why get a hotel when I can just drive home?
Mm-hmm.
Makes a lot of sense. It makes it cheaper too.
Oh yeah, it was bad enough with the parking, because even back then, you know, it wasn't cheap. It was still like, I don't actually. The funny thing is, I don't think the prices for parking in Philadelphia really have changed all that much. Because back then it was still like $10 to $15 a day, and today I think it might have gotten up to, well, it depends upon the day. You know, for day parking, usually, you know, like what, $20 or something like that. Because I know that's
on special events it's probably closer to $40, and they don't have an hourly rate either. It's you pay and you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you leave, you come back and pay again.
Understood. Yeah. Well, I went to Philadelphia, and actually there it was $20. I mean, went to the Phillies last night, and it was $20 for event parking. Of course, I was cash, and it was across the street from the Citizens Park. But it is what it is. Overall, it was you know, good game. I enjoyed it. Orioles lost, so I wasn't exactly thrilled. And to me, the thing that really just made it not as much of a happy, pleasant experience, it was just timing. My timing was awful in that the two times that the Orioles scored, I missed both of them. So I got to see the results. I just didn't get to see the actual it happen. You know, like
that stinks.
Yeah, the Adley Rushman, you know, three-run home run. So, because I think with the three-run home run, you've got the build-up to that home run. You got one guy on base. Oh, that's great. You got a second base. Oh, you know, wow. They got another one. Okay, Adley comes up the bat. Home run. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, part of that is just the build-up to the building of excitement. Getting to Philadelphia during rush hour traffic is insane. I didn't get into the stadium until, like, the second inning. And by that time, Adley Rushman already hit his home run. So it's like, missed that. And then they score again. What was it? Like the sixth inning, I think it is. The top of the sixth inning. And, you know, I was going to get something to eat. And by the time when I get back, I look at the scoreboard. They scored. It's like, what? When did they score?
Well, if you close your eyes and blink, you miss things.
Oh, I know. I was trying to watch the ball game as much as possible on the monitors because they have monitors there, you know, at the concession stands, so people can watch the game while they're waiting on the in line. And I missed that part.
Aw.
Yeah, that sucked. But anyhow, at this point, I think we will go on to the next topic for this evening. The main topic that I plan on talking about might be short, might be long. We'll just have to wait and see. And that is my game against Stephen McCann, the Andromedan versus the Winawks. Now, I will say one thing at the beginning of this. I was stupid. And this is why I say I was stupid.
And,
oh, that's fine. And that is, basically, I didn't see this for what it was. The ship that Stephen McCann was flying was a phaser boat. That's basically what it was. And normally...
It flew like one.
Yeah, that's very true. And of course, given that the one ox box has four phasers, ones that are 360, and then you've got the life, the right side and the left side phasers. Actually, the left side phase is a phaser one, left right side is a phaser G, and then you have the two phaser ones in the front. So you know, you get around to him.
He was going full ham on you.
Yeah, he can still get five phaser ones. Now, given that, of course, what does that mean? Since it's a phaser boat, what that means is that he's got a lot of power to do with it whatever he wants.
A lot of upset power.
Yeah, and he can go really, really fast and keep up that speed. So in that case,
and he can brick.
Yeah, and that's what he did. But my first battle pass, what happened at the beginning of the game, what he did is that he went for a corner dodge. Boom, turn. I came down the middle, you know, and then finally he came up. I came in and... So we finally at the, let me see, I gotta remember when this was. We didn't get close enough on turn one. So in turn two is when we came through our first battle pass. First battle pass to me was a perfect battle pass. And that is, I came in the range three of the Winox box. I did a dizzy dev, and I fired two phaser twos and two TR heavies at him at range three. Good going. Okay. So I get 35 from that on the shield number one, and then I forget some more from the phaser twos because range three is not too bad. So I knocked down his shield number one, which of course is beautiful, you know. And then I just dev away. So I'm running away. I got a few internals on, you know, nothing important got hit. I did get to hit one of his drones. One thing I forgot to mention is that on our coming in, he did launch I'm pretty sure he launched four drones. So, you know, I did live the way, and I'm running away from his drones. Of course, he's turning his ship, so he's no longer facing me. So we spread out a little bit. Come around, and I got to think about this. I knocked down two of his drones. He had three drones. At that point, I'm not sure why he only had three drones. But anyway, they were chasing me. I was able to. He had fired his seven phaser ones at me, so my front panels got beat up some. Before I distepped away, and when I ran away, you know, his drones kept on chasing me, and to do a little did I do it then? Yeah. To do a little bit of a panel dump, I did a mini dump, but I needed to first empty my batteries a little bit, so I fired a couple of phaser twos at one of the drones at like a long range, and I kept on running away. We come around for the second battle pass on turn four. This is where I make my big mistake. We're coming in. I'm not on shield number one yet. And this is the beginning of turn four. And I'm going, okay, I need to go 31 because I need to control where he goes. Well, I need to react to where he goes. This was my big mistake. The reason why it was my big mistake is because of I had previously headed to get away from his drones. Is that the right one? Yeah. So I already used up one of my hits, and I didn't want to hit in close. I wanted to be able to turn. I didn't realize I needed this, which I needed to turn in front of him so that I was hitting him on shield number one. But no, I went 31, so I ended up firing on shield number five, range two. Problem with this, of course, is I'm not sure if y'all realize it or not, but what it means is that he's got five phaser ones all facing my rear panels at that moment in time.
Which you filled up with a mini panel dump.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
how bad was the savaging call?
Well, at that point, this is where things started going downhill at this point. Because of he got the hit me range two. This guy, the phaser G was on the left side, not the right side. So he got the hit me with full phaser G's at range two. And it's, of course, he's got the rear extended phaser, which is an arc at this point. So fires me with that phaser three, and of course the other two phaser threes that are 360. And of course the four phaser ones gets a few internals on me. Unfortunately, he knocks out two of my phaser twos. He knocks out my padding. Didn't get any batteries. Didn't get to my TRs. But he got some power. This is where things are going downhill. I went, okay. I think I can survive. I was wrong. I said that was my big mistake. because if I would have gone slower, I could have turned into him and forced have it so I got on his shield number one, in which case I would have gone directly on down shield. So instead of only being able to hit him, his rear shield, you know, which, you know, 24 points of shielding there, I could have had 24 more internals, you know, on him, because I got some internals on him too. And so I run away, and I get caught up in the corner, you know, I go down and up in the upper left-hand corner. And at that point, I've got three drones which are following me. And unfortunately, I only have two phaser twos that can actually hit the drones, because because the problem is I'm running out of power here.
Always a bad
thing. And on the turn, okay, we're coming up on turn six, coming on the final battle pass. Is it? No, we don't get a battle pass. It's the turn five. Then he meets me up in there. And as I get it so that I knock out two of the drones. Well, there's one more drone left. There's only one choice. And unfortunately, it's the only choice I've got. And that is, I have to turn in and have it so the drone hits me on the front panels. Because if it hits me in the back panels, I'm totally toast at this point. So, hits me in the front panels. Well, I forgot to tell you, on that second battle pass, he got a panel.
Ooh.
So I only had three panels instead of four panels on the rear. And after the degradation at standard, not reinforced, I had 9 points of available to me, not power, but available more damage that it could take before I had to at least go for, you know, into the reinforced level, in which case I'd have an additional 12. So I have 21 points I can take in the rear at this moment in time. Of course, what happens? He comes racing in towards me. He keeps his shield number two facing me by the time I get this close. And I turn around and I'm facing him. He comes up behind me and then ding, 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 ding. And I'm dead at that point, because he goes right through my rear panels, gets like 30 internals where he knocks out both my TRHs and gets another panel. And it's just, and then he knocks out my batteries. Okay. At that point, I'm toast. I'm dead. And at that point, I concede the game. So, to say at the very least, I was foolish. Because, as I said, my big critical error was the second battle pass. I went too fast. But if we'd gone slower, I could have turned into him. He couldn't hit. And if I would have got turned into him and then require him to hit, that to me, I've got a bonus right there. That means he's in a situation where he has only one option, and that is to hit. And that's definitely the situation you want to put the Winox box in, because of they get no bonus for their hit.
And they got a lousy breakdown.
So that, because of that critical mistake that allows him to get to my rear panels, I lost the game. And as I said, the key here, as I said at the beginning of this whole, I almost want to call it a rant, feel free, is that I forgot that it was a phaser boat. Well, when preparing for the match. And normally the phaser boats are, you know, you have the Orion phaser boat is what you got. And obviously the Orion does a better job of it, because of it's got the power. It's also got additional power. It can draw up, but also has, you know, it has turn mode of A versus turn mode of B, or turn mode of D in this case. So it can, it has more, it's more maneuverable than the Andromedan. But the key here is that because of he was flying a phaser boat, he had all that power to do whatever he wanted to. And the funny thing is that, as I mentioned to Steve, after we did a post-game kind of wrap-up, and I mentioned how on the second battle pass, I screwed up. That was my big mistake, was the second battle pass. And you know, he agreed. That the thing is, on that last turn, I was running at speed 21 for the last turn. On that last turn, I had like 7 points of power. I think it was 8 points of power in my battery. I had to use all but 3 points of power to run my ship. So I kept it so that I had 3 points of battery power available. Because of the big issue here was, of course, that I need to be able to raise my palace reinforced levels. So what I had to do was, actually I did a mini dump where I actually turned off my front panels and have, so my rear panels were at standard level, so that, you know, yeah, you got 9 points of battery power that go, points of energy that goes into the rear panels, but you then all the rest goes into my batteries. At that point, I've got enough batteries to keep running for at least one more turn, because at that point, I had 6 points of power gone from my ship. I lost 4 points of warp power and the 2 impulse boxes. So I'm in trouble when it comes to power.
Right.
So I'm going speed 21, which is not that fast. And I'm using up almost all my power, including my battery power, just to keep the ship flying at a decent speed. Yeah. You know, and if Steven had done absolutely nothing to my ship, had not fired a single weapon, next turn, I probably would have been going like speed 15 and just winded because of, you know, because I'm not charging my phasers. The only thing I'm charging is my 2 TRs, I'm charging my Dizdev. And, you know, so there's 8 points of power out of 20 points of power that I have. Sorry, 22 points of power that I have. So that leaves 14. And then you got the 5 points of power that you have to have to keep the panels up. So that's down to 9. Times 3 divided by 2 equals. So that right there is speed 13 and a half.
Right.
So without batteries, I'm going speed 13. You want to talk about death?
Well, Steve just ran you out of power.
Mm-hmm.
And the battery's dry, and that's usually when Andromedans start dying.
Well, yep. And as I said, the key here was that he got the internals and knocked out my power, knocked out a panel. And also, of course, knocked out 2 of my front phaser 2s. Because if I would have still had my front phaser 2s, I could have killed the drones and kept a distance. I feel like I could have at least kept a distance from him. And possibly, if I... Yeah.
Yeah, it's a hard it's a hard thing to second guess.
Yeah. Oh, agreed. So as I said, the critical thing is that I forgot that it was a phaser boat. That's what it comes down to. And didn't try to play it as such. What could I have done differently overall? Oh yeah, right. Yeah. Okay, when it comes to the first battle pass, I didn't think I did anything wrong. I think I did it perfectly. And that is, I knocked down his shield number one. So that means that the two phaser ones he's got in the nose, they're FA arcs. So if I get out of the FA arc, I don't have to worry about those two phaser ones. So, yay. So I can decrease the amount of that. But as I said, the second one is where he actually got range two on the rear panels. That was a critical mistake by me. Now, I have to think about this for a moment. Because I don't remember if I had the ability and just chose. I got greedy. I think I had the ability, but I got greedy. And that is, I think I had the ability to actually side slip out. So it would have been a range three on shield number six, which I'm not sure if shield number six was reinforced or not. We got a little moment here. Maybe see if I can bring up the game. Give me this. Let's go this like this. Because I did save the game, and of course, let me see if I can. I might not be able to load it. I might have to do some more butzing, get it to load. Let's see if I can bring it up. And load game, and so I did save it. And you at the end of the game, you're supposed to reveal things. And my opponent's EA, and on turn four, yes, he had 8 points of power, reinforcing shield number six. So, yes, I wouldn't done nearly as much internals to him, which I got. I got all this hole. I got a phaser three. Got two phaser threes and an aux box. So I got a little bit of power too. I got 4 points of power. But of course, 4 points of power means nothing to him. But yeah, he had 8 points of power into reinforcement for shield number six.
Right.
So I wouldn't have been able to do. I might not have gotten any internals whatsoever, but he wouldn't have got any internals on me whatsoever. And if you think about it, if I would have sideslipped out to range three, off shield number six, then I wouldn't have got as much damage. That's fine. He wouldn't have gotten the rear panels, and I could have jumped away. Most probably, his shield number six would be either completely toast or close to it, and have it so that, he'd have two shields right next to each other down. So that would make it even easier for me to, on the next battle pass, if I have all of my facilities, to come in for another battle pass and actually hit him on a down shield.
And he would have had fewer drones in the rack to deal with too, for that matter.
Yeah, because as I said, on the first battle pass, I knocked out his one drone rack. And with that one drone rack gone, he actually did repair it. But of course, he repaired it to protect his other drone racks. Yeah, so that, you know, get next
just
set of
smart.
Yeah, oh yeah. Agreed. And I'm not sure what he set up his raids to be, because, you know, at the beginning of the game, we both set up, you know, our guards. Which, actually, the funny part is the first time I've ever done that. But I knew that it was going to be a game where I had the possibility where he might actually get on a down panel. So I was like, okay, let's protect, let's guard everything I need to guard.
As I understand it, the only way he can hit and run an Andromedan is if the panels are turned completely off.
That's correct.
Or they are completely battered down to nothing.
Yeah,
as in damage, all
degradation.
Boxes damaged.
Yeah, yeah, the degradation, completely degraded. That's the only two possible.
No, a completely full set of panels or a completely degraded set of panels still has just enough absorption capability to absorb the transporter signal.
Hmm.
I do remember seeing that once upon a time, though it may have changed.
Right, right. I'd have to double check on the degradation. I know definitely for full panels, that is definitely true. And the panels actually have to be off for them to do that. Actually, I'm going to do something which I really don't want to do, but I want to look at it anyway. Yeah, that looks just ugly. I'm going to do this real quick. Okay, this one, and that is. I just want to show people that are watching the video. I want to show them what my ending crate looked like. It ain't pretty.
No, that certainly is not.
Yep. Now here's of course the crazy part if you think about it. See this? He hit bridge. That means in theory, if you've gotten lucky enough, he could hit flag bridge and kill the Dizdev. So
you were two control boxes away from going uncontrolled.
Well, I don't have that many control boxes to begin with.
No, the Andromeda really doesn't.
Well, I got five. You know, we got the two bridge, two Oxcon, which I had both of them gone, and an Emer. And as is, it's just like the Orion. The Orion doesn't have that many control spaces. And for those watching, I'll show you my opponents. Here's what my opponents look like. Shield number one, down. Shield number five, down. With a few internals here, including both phaser threes are gone. Drone rack is actually repaired. I'm not sure if he had actually started to refill it or not. Hull boxes are gone. And only three cargo is gone. So he's got plenty to protect his batteries. And if you notice also, see here, ding, ding, ding. I have one PA panel left on my rear panels. Yes, as is, the fun part was that I screwed up the first time he did the set of internals where he knocked out PA panel number seven, which released 7 points of power. I forgot that the power goes directly to my other set of panels. So it actually goes to the front panels, and then it'll go to the batteries. I was trying to put it directly into my batteries, and then I realized, oh, no, it doesn't go to my battery. It goes to the other set of panels. That's how many times I've actually had it so that one of my panels actually gets destroyed.
It does seem like this was one of those times, Paul.
Yep. Oh yeah. Here it ended up where I turned around, as you can see here, now I was sideslipping away, and then he got up here. And of course at this point I have no phasers. the phasers here that I used, I used them against the drones that were following me. They came around here and they followed me up here. And so, you know, he fires on me, range two. Of course, the rear panels are facing him because it's right on the shield break. And that's when he, that's why he then absolutely kills me at that point. So you see, I got phasers. The only thing I have, two phasers, two here. The only reason they existed is because they couldn't be hit on a phaser hit. It was a phaser hit, not a weapon. A weapon, any weapon, it hadn't gotten to any weapon section yet, where then I have to start killing the phaser twos, and possibly, I think that this dev is also considered a weapon. So, there, no, it's empty. See? It's empty. Goofball cat. Sorry, got distracted by my cat. But
yes, one does.
Yep. My little Zinti. So it was an interesting game, but as I said, I forgot that it was a phaser boat, which means it had lots of power and didn't have to use much power for actually firing its weapons. Because it changes drastically if he uses, what's that one called? The one that what you do is you have a Hellbore drone rack. It's Hellbore drone rack, phaser one, and disruptor. I think that's the package. Or the one where you have two disruptors and two Hellbores.
And then you take all drones in the up and the others to shield the Hellbores.
Yep. But you already have the four drone racks to begin with the ship. You know. So, you know, in which case the wind has to worry about definitely has to worry about the shield number one in particular, but also has to worry about power. Because Hellbores are not exactly light on the power.
No.
Just to have standards, it's going to cost them 6 points of power just to do that. Versus with the phaser boat, he has 6 points of reinforcement. Additional reinforcement right there. Yeah, he can't overload, but, you know, if you can get close range, which, you know, that was part of my issue. That I kept on getting into close range, too. You know, I figured, okay, I should be able to take range three, and I can take range three, as long as the range three is not on my rear panels. But, you know,
like a comment from the Peanut Gallery points out that if you can hit and run on the Andro's toast anyway, and they're absolutely right.
Oh, agreed there, but of course, what was the thing I was guarding like my batteries, which is, well, duh. And of course my DizDev and my TR beams. So those are the main ones that I was protecting. And big surprise, because those are the most important things on the whole ship. Because I'm still of the opinion that, one, I think the Andromeda needs more power so it can fly around consistently, because of the biggest issue right now is that it doesn't have the power to run around. And because of it only has three batteries, it's got a maximum of 15. And as I pointed out, I was sucking wind by turn five. And if you look at my EA here, you know, here. You know, I was able to, because of my panels, where is it? See, here on turn two, I was able to get 2 points of power from my panels into my batteries because of absorption. from the panels. Now, turn three, as you can see, I added 13 points of power, and that's because I did a mini dump. And that's the only reason I survived, and how only reason I had 14. Now, as a four, you notice here that I add three. I use five because I had to reinforce my panels. And same here. That's why you have,
Paul, we're not actually seeing your power.
Oh, I'm sorry. Got to switch it back. I apologize. And yeah, you have five. And then here, notice I only have 8 points of battery power left at the end. And then if you see here, actually at this point, on turn five, I actually didn't have enough power in my batteries to reinforce my panels. But he was long enough, far enough away, and I was going to be able to do my panel dump early enough that wouldn't be a problem. But of course, that means, what do I have? I have 1 point, 1 2/3 points of reserve warp power. This is one of those nasty little buggers with the Andromedan. That he might have lots of power. How is he going to use it? He can't, unless he had it at the beginning of the turn and he had not used it, he can't use it for changing speed or doing a head or anything like that. So I start with 1 2/3, and then I do a panel dump. So I was able to add 7 points into it because of the mini panel dump, because I dropped my front panels to go into the rear.
Right.
And you see, I could then, okay, you have 1, 7, and 8. So from the beginning, just to have my ship surviving and it's recharging, but it needs to recharge. 15 points of power without moving one box, without moving one hex. So, and I've got 22 points of power. That means I've got 7 points of power to actually move without using batteries, which is why I had to use, at the very beginning of it, I had to use 7 points of battery power so I actually could move at a decent rate, and that's only 21. So 3 points of battery is kind of rough.
There it is.
Yeah, three batteries. Now, do I agree with it with having three batteries? Yes, I do. I totally agree with it should have three batteries, but I think it also should have some more power overall, so it can fly a decent speed without having to worry about the batteries being gone. Well, sorry, the batteries being empty. But that's my opinion on that. Well, that's one thing I definitely realized I'm going to need to look into, which is these little suckers. See that? When the point of turn and point of slip move, it shows a line. And so that's probably one thing I should turn off of those, which is the tracking.
Yeah, that would be a good idea.
And also, I was thinking about for the Andromedan, I need the ability to reset. Because
I've been thinking that with some of this stuff, you really ought to have the ability to purge the trails when desired.
Right. Well, I was thinking about is adding ability to clear the tracking, so it resets. So then, when this goes like, oh, jump that many hexes, yes, it can move anyway. Yes. You don't see this.
Right.
When you do a dizzy dev. The simplest approach is just to reset. Because the other possibility also, of course, is add smarts into it to check the distance between the previous point and the current point and make sure it's only one. And if it's greater than one, then don't draw the line. So, you know, I can obviously add some smarts into the drawing so it doesn't do that. Which, yeah, I was going to say that would solve this problem, but that wouldn't solve the problem because, actually, you know, it wouldn't solve the problem always for the point of turn and point of slip. But anyhow, okay, with that, I think I will wrap it up for this evening. Obviously, I lost, as if that wasn't obvious. Next Sapphire Star tournament, I'm debating on whether I'm gonna go back to Andromedan again, or I'll do something else. Because I've flown different ships, in the tournament I've flown the Andromeda, I've flown the Sultorian, I've flown the King Eagle.
You just have a perchance for hard luck ships, Paul.
Yeah. Oh well, I when it comes to Sultorian and the King Eagle, actually the King Eagle I just like it because the design of the ship, you know it. Maybe it's because it takes me back to the original series.
Right.
You know, and when the ROMs were first introduced. Oh, crap.
And being able to belch out 100 points of enveloping plasma at somebody who doesn't expect it is a nice bonus.
Yes, it is. Whoever can do that and have it hit. Oh, so sweet. So sweet. Beautiful. Anyway, yeah. So, I'm debating. Plan I'm doing at the moment for the next Sapphire Star tournament is to wait. I.e., see if there's anyone else who wants to play first, and if it's been like 2 weeks, and they still haven't got it filled up, all 16 slots, then put my hat in the ring. And
also, that sounds fair.
Right. And also with the next one, try to do what I did this one, which is I actually sent out a notification to all the players of SFB Online that the Sapphire Star tournament was started, well, not started, but accepting signups. And that you can sign up. And I think that helped this time. That helped us get things started quicker than just having it so it was posted to the discussion board, because I'm not sure about how many people still visit the discussion board on a regular basis. I'm not gonna say daily, I'm gonna say regular.
Though, well, a few do.
Yeah. I'm sad in one thing, in that the discussion board is so old that it doesn't support HTTPS. You know, when the rest of the world is doing that, and also browsers are becoming to expect it.
Yeah, it's become an issue here at the site of StratCon. The host's Wi-Fi router is set to block unsecure servers, so yeah, have to use alternate means.
Yeah, I saw that, and I agree with which is what the problem is. It's AT&T. The reason why I say that is because I had the same experience with another person who wanted to use SFB Online, and the problem they were having is that they weren't getting the rankings for the people, and also they couldn't download the ships, you know, the library ships. And that's because of I was using an HTTP connection instead of an HTTPS connection, and AT&T was blocking it, and so they had to go into AT&T and they had to add an exception.
And if you're not web savvy enough to do that, it can be a pain in the neck.
Yeah, and if the, assume you're staying at an Airbnb.
Yep.
So they'd actually have to set up, say, okay, this website, and okay,
it's fine. In this particular instance, yeah, they're not going to do anything like that.
Right. Oh, agreed. Agreed. You know, so not sure what you can do about that. But anyhow, Jeff, it's been lovely having you around. Thank you for the update of StratCon. And please, please have fun.
Will do.
Okay, great. Doug, it's always good to have you around. I will definitely talk to you this weekend about winners, gamers of summer and so forth. Okay? Okay. Don't know if I lost him or not. But anyway, doesn't matter. It's the end. So anyway, had a nice discussion about StratCon and F&E to start off the podcast, which I think was an excellent way of starting. Then also had a little quick review of my game and the things that I did wrong, the things that I did right. Because I did do some right things. I didn't totally screw it up. One thing I really did not like doing, but I didn't see a way around it. And that is, I really did not like using the displacement device as much as I did. Because of, I used it twice, and of course, this twice I could have failed. And I would have been in really dire straits, especially the second time. The second time when it failed, I would have been really in dire straits. Really, really, really. Because there's a possibility what you might want to have done is, I'm not sure that Steve would have done this, but he could have done an immersion deceleration, possibly, so that he could turn around and get more phasers and hit on my rear panels. And I'm not sure if he would have done that, because it would have been like range 5 by the time it got, actually, that would be an ED, not, well, you know, he could have gotten 1, 2. It would have taken him 3 impulses, because he'd have to stop, tack warp, impulse warp, impulse tack. So I'm not sure if that would have been viable, but you know, it's one thing he could have done. But in any case, I didn't like relying on the Diz Dev to get out of the situation. I definitely will want to think about that ship again, and how is there a way of playing against that ship that doesn't require you to use the displacement device, or can use it in a more tactical advantage. Because as I mentioned before, when talked about the South Carolina versus New Jersey ways of playing the Andromeda, and the New Jersey is to basically use the ability of the Andromeda to use the displacement device to tactically place yourself, and if it fails, okay, you don't, but also use the maneuverability of the Andromeda ship to do a knife fight and get it so that you can get it so he hits your front panels and you can do the panel dumps close in without having an issue and so forth, you know. So, you know, I'm not sure if there's a way of doing it. There might be a way, but anyhow, with that, I am Paul France, and I bid you a good night.